Hello and good morning. Welcome back to the Explicit Measures podcast with Tommy, Seth, and Mike. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning and a happy Tuesday, gentlemen. Happy Tuesdays to you.
For those of you who are wondering, why did the podcast start a little bit early today? Well, we have some people who need to get stuff done today. So meetings have been shifted, people not feeling good. So we figured, you know, we'll just knock this one out here fairly quickly and get this started a bit early. So for those of you starting at 7:30, we apologize. You can watch it on fast replay, but
yeah, contrary to popular belief, we all have jobs.
Believe it or not, this is not the only thing we do, and the podcast doesn't really rake in any money. So this is like all, you know, pro bono.
So when we can get up even earlier, just to make sure,
I enjoy that
podcast.
I love getting up earlier. Let's do that.
January's been good for me, man. I've been the getting up early and earlier and earlier and setting up with the day. It just means as old as I am, I crash earlier too.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. 8 o'clock, you're like, okay, kids, get in bed. I'm done.
It's
like, I don't care what you do, but I'm going to bed.
It's no longer getting the kids in bed. The priority, it's like getting myself in bed.
Kids, come yourself to bed. Come tuck daddy in.
We're not whining tonight. Dad just got to go to
bed. Exactly.
I'm not in for that tonight, okay?
That's funny.
Yeah.
Any kind of other intros or openers today? Seth, I think you've got a couple comments around. We've been doing this. Let me introduce the main topic here, and then we'll come back to this. I'll do a little news here. We've been going through every Tuesday the BI strategy. We've been working our way through the documentation that Microsoft provided. Awesome documentation, by the way. Lots of good stuff. And we were going to be tackling today tactical planning. And inside that section, we're going to talk about defining the key results. But in lieu of that, some major changes have been happening in the documentation, all thanks to our one and only Seth Bauer.
I don't know if we'd say that.
Round of applause. There we go. Round of applause for Seth.
Who tortured himself and listened to this podcast. So on Thursday last week, I briefly mentioned this, but I want to lean into it a little bit more in this one. So as you said, we've been doing the adoption roadmap, ton of time spent in the technical planning here. And I think it's really valuable because we're just throwing different ideas. We're raising to light for our listeners that there's a lot of great knowledge sharing going on. And if you joined us last Tuesday, I started with a bit of a rant that there was a lot of cognitive dissonance. So the analogy I used is when looking at a Power BI report page, if we're looking at visuals that just don't make sense or they're really challenging or hard to understand because they're not part of our dictionary. They're not part of like, how do I read the data out of this thing? Every time you go back and use it, you have to think a lot about what it's telling you. And that's where I found myself with the documentation. And I finally lost it last week because it was creating its own definitions for goals and objectives. And when we compare those against frameworks like OGSMs or OKRs, they weren't aligning. And this was creating this like kind of the gears in my head were clanking together.
The inner tension
I was going
kept
through.
Rising and rising.
It was like clank, 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 clank. And I expressed my frustration and the path I would choose, which is aligning.
Anger and yelling.
It was passion on the mic. That's what it was.
Passion. Aligning to frameworks that exist, because I think having spent a lot of time learning these frameworks, I realize and see how powerful they are in organizations. So Kurt heard this and not only reached out to Microsoft, but started implementing changes in the documentation almost immediately, reached out to me on LinkedIn. Hmm? And as of like coming in this morning, it's like reading a completely different set of documentation in my mind. Like all of the new stuff we were going to review and talk about today was in the same frameworks that you'll find in a tool that Microsoft uses or created called Viva Engage. It's the OKR framework.
Yeah.
What is so fantastic about this, and why I'm excited to now jump in and talk about this, is every aspect of this is now reinforcing for people not familiar with these frameworks, not only what tools they can use to go like learn more about them, but that you start to apply these frameworks within your own business if your business doesn't do them, right? And this is transformational stuff. So we're just talking about like the nitty-gritty of technical stuff and strategy and planning and all of these areas within this documentation, but now it's coupled together with really strong frameworks that have been around for a really long time. And it was, for me, the gears were flying this morning, guy. It was just, man, this is perfect. We're talking about key results. Yep, that makes total sense. And then we'll get into it later, but there's a table in here that is beautiful. It's exactly what you would want to present to people, because if you're not familiar, right? Like, hey, I know we're talking, Seth's ranting and raving about objectives and key results. That doesn't mean anything. It's a real life example of, here's the objectives I'm talking about in this documentation. Here's the key results, and here's how you go implement it. And it just, guys, I love it. I love, lots of love to Kurt. And the fact that all these changes happened so quickly in the span of a week is just utterly amazing.
And maybe this was meant to happen too in all of this framework, because time and time again, I think we've all been part of this, where we're really have meeting, and you at an organization with a team working by yourself, if you could have not defined your goals and you have not truly defined what that actually means, not just I have a goal, I'm going to lose 10 pounds or whatever your New Year's resolution is.
You're going to lose more than 10, that's for sure.
Yeah. But whatever your objective is, and then trying to communicate that with someone else, that just truly just goes back to the raw fact of your ability to communicate. And if you cannot communicate with someone else, how in the world are you going to achieve whatever you're expecting to achieve? Because all words have meaning. All of this is so important. I really just go back to all of this whole framework, this whole tactical planning, strategic planning. It all starts with, what are we really trying to achieve here? If we're going to do all this and spend all this time here, whether we're talking about it or you're going to organization, if we're at the end, quote unquote, why are we celebrating? And if we have not defined that or can't define that across the team, there's no success going to happen.
Yeah. The only cognitive dissonance that now exists are people who are listening to our previous podcasts where our words don't align directly to the documentation anymore. And I'm okay with that. That just means they have to be like, are these guys really
follow the journey?
Yeah. Am I in the right place?
Yeah. I see what you're saying. They're going to go, what are you talking about? Yeah. I see key results here. Why is he so angry?
Seth is crazy. He's crazy. He's talking about stuff that doesn't even exist.
It used to exist and now it does not. So two things out of this one. Kurt, thank you very much for aligning on a direction of like OKRs. You're making the messaging very clear. I think this clarifies a lot of what's going on here. And I think this is great that you're using the same messaging we're seeing in other like Viva goals, other places like metrics from Power BI. Like all these things seem to be aligning better. And in general, this feels like, yes, the right direction. So thank you very much for the changes. We're really looking forward to jumping into the article then. So with that, let's any other openers or any other new announcements on things? Just going to take a quick look over here at the blog.powerbi.com to make sure nothing new has appeared for anything interesting. I do believe Microsoft is heavily pushing the Microsoft Fabric Conference that's coming up this March. So if you're not engaged, that's in Las Vegas this year. It'll be March 24th, 25th, it'll go through the 24th through the 29th. The actual, the conference is the 26th through the 28th. And then if you want some pre-cons, the 24th, 25th, and 29th are also pre-cons and post-cons that you can go through to learn more and get additional information around Fabric and things as well. So stay tuned. There's more information coming up, but that's like the main focus here for the next, I think, couple months. Microsoft's really going to push that conference. So if you haven't got tickets, go ahead and see if you can go get some tickets. I wonder if we could, since Kurt's doing so many good things, I wonder if we can go get some discount codes from Microsoft. hey, Microsoft, I don't know if there's anyone listening from Microsoft, which is probably like one of you guys anyways. You know, reach out to us. We'd love to give away some discount codes to the podcast if you can, for all of our avid listeners and long-term supporters.
We're pushing the OKR framework, some discount codes for Viva Engage.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know? I think that'd be great.
Yeah, there you go. Love the idea, Mike.
That's what the co-pilot told me to say.
That's so good.
I mean, it just came up, and it's writing my own emails for me now. I have prompts now for, you know, write this email for me, and then it says, please go to the Microsoft Fabric Conference sponsored by Copilot.
Thank you for listening to the podcast.
Excellent. Well, with that, let's get into our main topic for today. So the link for today here, I'll go grab the link for everyone to go follow through with on the chat. This is the section we're going to talk about today in our podcast. We're going to talk about defining the key results from the tactical planning section of the implementation strategy. So initial thoughts here. Let's, Seth, you've been having some good thoughts already. Let's jump in with some of your initial thoughts on the this next section called Define the Key Results.
I think he starts it off well, and we may have rehashed some of this towards the end of our previous episode. But ultimately, hits on the three key points, right, which we'll dive into. Demonstrate progress, and I think there's even a little warning thing in here. This doesn't have to be like a full ramp out, right? Like this is just incremental. We're just trying to find incremental ways to improve the business, improve an area, you know, keep it small. Like very rarely is this going to be like, yep, we're all in, and like all of a sudden 20 resources are all at everybody's disposal and we're just going to crank this stuff out in a day.
Yep.
But then demonstrate progress, right? Like we've got to understand what we're going to do. There's got to be a strategy behind how we're going to execute, and that's where OKR framework's broken down in here. And then ultimately there's a recycle, like, or a reset, kind of just keeping that continuous improvement, you know, theme in mind. You're going for short, you know, quarter by quarter, you know, kind of evolutions where you're reevaluating whether or not, like, are we on the right track? Do we need to tweak? What did we accomplish? What do we still need to finish up? Where are we going, et cetera? Mm-hmm.
I think it behooves us, if I think that's the right word, behooves us, to kind of touch on key results because on the idea of this, because we might have touched on it. It's already in the documentation. And I've noticed that it's easy to see, it's hard to create. And just kind of talking about really what a key result is, because I think a lot of times we try to boil the ocean with key results. And I'll give an analogy that's actually from the Measure What Matters book. This is where the whole OKR framework came out.
Yeah.
And the idea of how does the OKR framework really work? Because it becomes like a trickle down effect. And I'll use a great analogy again from the book, but also what a good timing. We have the Super Bowl coming. If you had an objective and you were the owner of a football team, you had an objective. The objective is to be one of the more successful football teams in the league. By itself, that does not have anything measurable. So you have to create your key result. If we're going to have that objective to be the Patriots of the NFL, what's the key results? Well, it's probably he's going to have two, or she's going to have two. The number of seats or fans that come to our games, the number of wins that we have. Okay, those are two direct key results to the objective. Now, the beauty of that key result and what they do is that becomes the objective for the next level down. So now if I'm the general manager and I'm the manager of the stadium, my objective is I need to get wins. And the objective for the next person is I need to fill up our stadium with 80% capacity, whatever that measurement is. They have key results. Begins to trickle down. The general manager, okay, I need to get 15 wins. I need a great quarterback. So you begin to see how it trickles down. But the key here of a key result is the key result in itself is not the whole success measurement of the whole project or what you're trying to do. Is directly correlated and tied and binded to that one objective with a set date for a set measurement. It doesn't have 18 measurements in it. And I think this is what gets a lot of people, and the OKR framework becomes a lot more complicated than it needs to be, where they think like, well, we need the conversions and we need the sales and we need to get this done underneath. So we try to do everything with one key result or one objective. But this is why I think everything up till now has talked about define your objectives very clearly and prioritize them, because you're not going to be able to boil the ocean in the beginning. So that's then where the key result really becomes impactful.
I would agree with that. And I'm going to repeat what you said in Seth speak.
Okay, sure,
if that's
sure,
okay. Sure. Right. So an objective is the what, right? It's the describing what we want to achieve. And it's supported by the goals and deadlines for achievement, right? Mm-hmm. So these objectives can kind of fall into two buckets, right? The really audacious ones, like mm-hmm. these really big ideas, like, hey, okay, we have this objective that could happen for the year, but oh my goodness, if we did this, right, we would shift into the next level. And then there are not, I'm not going to say more realistic objectives, but there are objectives that are shorter term, but still big impacting, but more on the nebulous idea, not nebulous, in the higher level description, the right, what it is we're trying to achieve. Key results are the how. Like ultimately, how are we going to achieve the objective and the benchmarks of how you get to achieving that deadline. So they, to your point, Tommy, they're specific, they're time bound, and they're measurable and verifiable.
Right.
Right. So typically objectives are set off in quarterly spans, mm-hmm. and the key results, you know, and this is where it's like really interesting for teams too, right? Or organizations, is some of these things can link together and some could be independent. But at the same time, like, you have a measurement stick along the way of the objective, and these are the key results. And every one of them should have a way to measure, whether that's a percentage or an actual number. Like, these are the things that let us know whether or not we're on track with our objectives and overall how these things roll up, which is why there's programs like Viva Engage, you know, other ones out there that, help you track these things and see what your progress is, to know well before the deadlines how far along you are in these efforts towards shaping change within the organization.
And I think the mantra in the OKR framework is anything that you've done or worked on or set an objective, you must be able to say, we were successful in Project X or Campaign X as measured by Y. And if you don't have the ability to say the as measured by aspect of that, there's no way to really say that you're successful. And that's the key point here with the OKR framework, and love that we're bringing that into our implementation here.
Yeah. So Mike, were you going to say something?
No, go ahead.
Okay. So like right off the gun here, right? We're talking about the indicators for success in the technical documentation. Like we're picking somebody, we're tracking changes, we're, you know, automating as much of this as possible, as far as like just this roll up of how effective we're being. And there are many different ways, like whether or not that's a KPI measurement in a report or a key result in an objective that we're tracking as we go. It's important that like we're defining that these are structures that we're setting up to execute on.
Here's what's interesting about this. As I'm going through the Kurt's article and talking about the effectively using indicators, mm-hmm. it's also a great indicator of, without using the word twice, but of your data culture too, because what's a big part, Seth, of a KPI or a big part of having a key result? It's the accountability. And I've seen this time and time again. We've talked about this a ton. I think this is one of our almost origins of the podcast too, where the big agita that we've had or the big pain points where we're trying to get these things measured, but people are not willing to take on that responsibility that they're going to be tied to a number. I know, and we always laugh about that, but we've seen that. And to me, as we're going through this too, it's like reporting your indicators. How are we going to track that change? Reporting if we're actually going to make it towards the target. It becomes a lot easier in anything, but I think especially in this, if we can't do this, I think it's a good indication of where we need to focus on as an organization to get Power BI successful or be make Power BI successful. These go hand in hand.
Now I love your point, Tommy, but as soon as you used the word agita,
sorry,
I got stuck because okay. I think there's a lot of non-Italians out there.
Steve, that's where I can't fathom. But okay, agita means literally a pain in the stomach or acid in the stomach, anxiety or suffering.
There you go. There All right, go. I got hung up on the word there.
I agree with you, Tommy. Like, if in all of this, if there is one linchpin, like the one thing that you don't have, that will make all of this fall apart, is if you don't have specific people that are, like, in a positive way, we would say owners yeah. of certain things. In a negative way, it'd be like people with their response, their things on the line.
Yeah.
Yeah. People aren't like we, there's like, no skin in the game. If there's no skin in the game, things aren't going to change. So right. this was one of my one points. I think I was, you know, as you guys were talking through the article here and, you know, key results, a couple things that really stood out to me was making sure that you have clear objectives. I think a lot of times we'll have generalized goals we're trying to achieve. Look, I need to get this report out. Okay. That's a goal. That's a very tactical piece of what you're doing.
Yeah.
How does that align to your objective? And this is one of the phrases that we use a lot in the podcast. If it doesn't save you money or make you money, why are we building the report? And so I think this is even more important when you're spending centralized BI costs to be able to build reports for different business units. If it is not making you money, if it's not saving you money, seriously think about why you're actually doing it. So, and again, I'll put in that save you money. That's a very large bucket. Saving you money is saving you time, right? So if I save time by showing up with this report, great. That's saving you money at that point. It's doing it faster than it was before. And I think one area of measurement here that's very hard to quantify is people's time. I don't think we have a good grasp on how much that actually costs organizations to worry about people's time. I mean, if you think about where most of your expense comes from in your teams. Does it come from the computers? Does it come from the hardware? Likely not. It likely comes from the people you hire to move the data around. So the more I can automate, the more I can spend money on computers to do the things that I need to do and have people thinking about, again, they're a valued asset. So I want people thinking about hard problems, solving things that are very challenging. I want to focus. I don't want them moving data between Excel sheets.
Right.
Yeah. That's a waste of my time. I have someone here who can think and do things. I want them thinking and doing things. Like, how are you? Like, our objective is to make X number of revenue. Get those people thinking about how to get to that goal.
Yeah.
Where do we go? Is there waste we can take out of the process? Is there something you can do more efficient? That's what I want you focusing on. I don't want you sitting there going from one Excel sheet to the other. Automate that crap.
It is shocking to me how many organizations don't recognize that value.
Add, it's hard. Right? It's like, hard to quantify.
It's not hard to quantify.
How do you measure it though? I mean,
well, so in consulting, it's very easy because you're used to, you know, saying here's what my dollar, my hour is worth. Here's my hour, what my hour is worth. How do we calculate that? Well, there's 28 hours in a year, etc. Like, here's what it is per hour, whatever. Like, you can easily break down how much money is being spent. Not, and it's based on a 40-hour work week. So regardless of, you're also getting paid on a 40-hour work week. We all work more than 40 hours, but we're not quantifying that.
Correct.
It is what is in the paycheck. So I love doing this. And I just did it again not long ago, where it's like, okay, we're going to do something. Let's do some analysis based on that decision.
Yeah.
And the outcome of that analysis for implementing this thing is a net negative effect or a really bad decision related to the direction we want to go because it's introducing inefficiencies into the organization. And Mike, this is like to your point, like, when you're always looking for efficiencies, right? Especially with manual work around data or data movement or manual this or manual that.
Sure.
Like, I think our area is just rife for like glomming onto this or like getting the red siren. Like,
totally. It's
like, there's one over here. There's one over here. Come over here. You're like,
yes.
But that it's so relevant. It's so relevant.
And I hear a lot. Go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say, I like that idea in this framework. I think this is really good. And the last point I want to kind of make here was looking at this thing. Another one I find is very challenging here is measuring the goal. What is that goal that you're going to measure? I think dollars are very easy to measure. You want to increase revenue? Great. It's a very quantitative number that you can go to. But there's a lot of other things in your organization you're trying to deliver. And Tommy, we've actually argued about this on the podcast. We feel like Tommy's like, hey, we want to get more listeners. Heck yeah, we do. We all agree on that. We want to get more people, you know, engaging with the podcast. That's what we want. And then the question becomes, to bring it really home here, is, well, what does, we would all agree, and we've all agreed on this, is like, yeah, we want more engaged users. Okay, define an engaged user. Well, and then it gets a little bit more fuzzy because you're trying to define parts of this. I mean, you can define various pieces.
We're trying to define our goal. Like, okay, we have more engaged users. Now what?
Yeah.
No, what does that mean? No. Your objective is we want more engaged users. The key results are the challenge.
What? Right.
This actually is a great dovetail into like your points, Mike, that I want to stress for the audience. OKRs and talking about these frameworks is super easy. Saying like objectives, this is what this is. Key results, this is what that is.
Yep.
It takes practice and a lot of like, man, like to bring home your ideas in your business and get it into the framework that fits, right? So don't trivialize this. This is why I'm excited about the changes to the documentation because it points people into the directions of, oh, Viva Engage, what is this thing? What is this framework? What is it? Because this is a practice. It's a trained skill to go in and understand how to define these levels. And when you get them right, man, it's fantastic. But when you get them wrong, same difference, right?
That's going to guide the people
spinning
too,
the wheels on something. Yeah.
Yep. And I'm not going to go in my Seth soapbox here. But the one thing I would say with the identify the key results is there's a list here of adoption, governance, and implementation of all potential key results. The one thing I would say here is it's a great list, but the key results, again, the success and the real trueness of them is because it's tied and binded to an objective. It's great to have something you can measure here, but by itself, those key results really don't mean a ton. And like I said, it's a good list, but you have to have what it's tied to. You have to have, if you're going to say adoption, that's going to be one of our objectives, right?
Yes. Well, this, to me, adoption is a great one to use as a key result.
Let's see what those objectives are. And then we can say what we're going to measure that success of adoption.
Correct. And I feel like for adoption pieces, you can say, okay, adoption is, and then you can actually put some real numbers around it. Adoption is, more people accessing reports in PowerBI.com, you know, this in a 30-day window, right? You can define a very specific metric around that. That's something that's very measurable. And to your point, Tommy, this is exactly fits very well with the effectively using indicators, right? There's another great section here talking about report on your indicators, tell people what you're measuring, define what that is, automate the data collection of those things. So if you don't, and again, I'll stand on this again on another soapbox. If you don't have monitoring on your Power BI environment, beyond what Microsoft gives you, that will only take you so far. If you have a larger organization and you're rolling out premium and all these other things in your organization, how are you going to measure year over year adoption on your intent if you don't have some better method to collect things? Mm-hmm. You need better tooling to collect how people are using your Power BI environment.
Right.
And then you got to track your change. You have to assign someone to own it. And these are a lot of these tasks, I think, particularly around data culture, rest or reside in that center of excellence. The center of excellence is going to take on the responsibility of collecting the data, making sure it's right, and reporting on it. Because if you don't report back out on that, no one's doing anything. Like,
but it
just goes by the wayside, and no one's actually going to push and try. You have to. It's like you're trying to balance on something, right? It takes effort to balance.
Because I think, again, too, the part of just having the key result is we have to remember that everyone's going towards that same objective and everyone's already bought in. So, like, all the adoption ones here, like, and they're good. Host a number of mentorship sessions, guide a certain percent of sales towards data literacy. all fine. But again, it's not just one person doing this, right? You're getting a lot of people involved, and a lot of people are going to be accountable. So if that's going to work, again, they have to be tied to some objective. And Seth, I'll just say this real quick. That's a big point. It's a lot easier to talk about it than it is to create it.
Yeah, and you make a really good point, because otherwise all this just becomes busy work.
Yeah.
Right? And, yeah, and exactly. it's not like there's not a benefit to the organization or your area because you're producing something, but there's a story here. You have to be able to define, like, okay, we're doing all this stuff. What is it getting us? And sometimes, like I said, a lot of these objectives are quarterly, maybe or longer term, but typically you try to keep them in a quarter. But at the same time, like, some of these big long-term strategies, right? These key results are the opportunity to be stepping stones towards that long-term strategy, or they could alternatively not be stepping stones.
Right.
And I think that's the biggest difference, is if you think through all these things, right? And then make sure that how you're aligning all these little steps, like one day we're going to be at the top of the mountain instead of just circling the mountain, right? Same amount of steps, right? But it's just like one is going to get us somewhere and others maybe get us, you know, a quarter of the way up, because we're circling it instead of just going up in a straight line.
I agree with that. There's another, I mean, as I keep walking down through this tactical planning section here, there's another, and it keeps hitting like on really good points here.
Yeah.
And I really like how this article is also dovetailing back into the adoption roadmap, mm-hmm. right? You'll see a couple sections in here where it says, in the section called Identify Your Key Results. There's actually another call out here that says, directly address your weaknesses and the opportunities that you have found and identified in your data culture review, in your technical assessments. So again, one of these things I would really point out here is the technical assessments of where you are and where your skills of your team is. This is really important to understand this. And again, I think my experience is many organizations overestimate how competent they are in Power BI. We've got someone building reports. They've been doing it for 2 years. They're great. Let's go. And then what happens is these models get slow. They get out of sorts. They're not managed well. We start running into problems and challenges. And nothing wrong. It just means the user hasn't had the scope of experience of what they need to have to build enterprise Power BI solutions. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with this. It just means
it's not fine because there's a cost to the business, and usually it's one that goes P1, P2, P3 really in rapid succession.
Well, and maybe more of what I mean by that is it's fine in the fact that it's okay to identify the team members don't have the expertise that they need, but you need to invest in them, right? They have to go learn what they need to go learn. And so you got to go find solid training, right? I can't speak highly enough of any of the SQL BI training. It's just absolutely incredible. And, you know, when you start getting people who really start wanting to learn how to data model, there are definitely distinct, in my opinion, there's definitely distinct personas of people who like to do certain things. Some people like just to make reports. Some people like to do the data modeling. And some people actually like doing a combination of data modeling and data engineering altogether. You find those people. And anyone who's interested in data modeling, push them down to SQL BI.
Yeah.
Go get some training. Get some formal knowledge under them. They will build better models. And I can't tell you, we had it happen again. We have a model that was sent out to a service, and we cut 40% of the model by removing two stinking columns.
Yeah.
40%.
That's for a bank analyzer. That's not training.
but it's knowing where to look. There's a high cardinality column here and here. And if we remove that join, if I take this one dimension table and made it two, it takes the joins or the amount of joins way down in level. So one, the performance of the report went up and the number of high cardinality joins went way down. Yeah. Performance went through the roof. And so
remember text ID and date time date.
I mean, if you're talking models that are, you know, 8, 9, 10 gigabytes, if you can cut 40% out of a model at that size, that's massive. And you're not going to get, you know, the hundreds of millions of records that you want to put into reports unless you start doing these things. So again, If you're a small business, you got light, you know, small business, small problems, big business, big problems. You're just accelerating that need there. And it's just going to be that much more difficult for your team to kind of build things that perform well. And then what you have, and Seth, you'll know this one too, you'll have is finance will keep coming back to you and go, why are we going to a P2? Why are we spending so much money on this? All because we didn't understand how to tune and optimize the models and actually remove columns of data we just didn't need for the reporting purposes. If it's really not required, ditch it, get rid of it. So that's my point there.
No,
this is real dollars.
This is real, not only real dollars, but I think you put this full circle too, where when you put this OKR framework and when you've identified those key results, you can actually get a lot more buy-in too. So take that example. We need better Power BI experts. We need some champions in Power BI, right?
It's sure, like, okay, sure.
Great. Well, what's that actually going to do for us? Well, they're going to know DAX a lot better. Cool. And you're trying to get buy-in here.
Yeah. Well, say, hey, I'm going to take your P2 and make it a P1. Now you got people's ears. Like, hey, you can save me 60 grand a year.
As measured by what?
By people? Okay, now we're talking.
Right. And then do you actually get buy-in on, okay, if you're going to spend all this dollars on either hiring people or SQL BI, and they're going to take, we know that we're not going to have our reports now. It's going to be a few months from now to get that proper training. You sell me on that. And that you're going to, they may not say sell me on that, but you're going to need to have, we've invested all this time in Power BI and our people, and we know this worked as measured by what? And that's where it becomes a little harder. But to your point, yeah, there's all those other measurable things. We've cut our models down by 40%, but that's where other input goes in as well. But all that also really helps with buy-in.
Yeah. So I do want to make sure we get through this section, at least we can go to the regular by desk show. But like you guys were saying, like some great examples in adoption and governments. One of the key parts about governance that was like beneficial to me is I always get stuck in this data governance. When we talk about governance, I always think data in the pipeline, like ensuring data values and things like that. But it's not always that, right? And in these examples, we're talking about like governance of administrating the solution, right? So part of that is one of the main key points and drivers, Mike, that you addressed in here, monitoring. You cannot, you're not going to be in a position to make these sorts of changes or decisions unless you understand what's happening in the ecosystem. And predominantly, that's either based on usage or performance of your models, because it's going to indicate, Mike, to your point, we've got a problem. Something's scaling out like rapidly, and it shouldn't be. We got to go, we have to go performance tune. We have to go look at like the actual reporting, or we have the flip side is we have performant models. We just have like rampant usage ramping up on all of these other things. And that is something that you would need to pay for, right? That is a, hey, we've got broad adoption of these reports. Data and insights are getting into people's hands. This is a positive thing. You know, like we're getting a lot of value as a business out of this. And yeah, like it requires a ramp up because we don't have the capacity because people are complaining how slow it is. So like those are some of the key factors, I think, like dumped into, you know, the end part of this particular section.
Yeah, I like this one a lot. And so I think I've gotten through most of the article now. I'm down to the section here where we're starting to talk about, you know, completing the technical assessment, you know, identify your main tactical areas, identify your maturity levels. Again, I can't emphasize enough the identifying maturity levels in the various aspects. So when you talk about, there's another link in here that I really want to highlight, identifying the maturity levels of the Fabric Adoption Roadmap. A Fabric Adoption Roadmap is another great library of information here, but it is slightly separate than this implementation planning. But making sure you go through those maturity levels and identifying where you are, you're not going to be 500 level and all those things. You're going to be some in the middle and some in the lower ones. You don't need to jump two or three levels at a time. Just make progression, move to the next level kind of thing. So I really like this ending of the article. Excuse me, I agree. Anything else? Let's do. I know we're kind of at time here, just because of our needs internally here for timing. Let's just kind of do a quick roundup here of final thoughts, and then we'll kind of we'll call it here.
I wish we had more time. The last thing I'll say is the buy-in and the collaboration side is one aspect here that I would love to talk more on, because we've talked about the BI team and really that kind of core aspect. But with OKRs, and especially with the key results, it's so imperative that you get the buy-in across teams, from accountability to what they're also measuring as what they deem success. All those things, there's such a cross collaboration here that's so important, that communication side, that I feel like we could spend another 4 podcasts on.
Seth, any final thoughts from you? What stood out to you in this next section here?
OKRs for the win, gentlemen. OKR for FTW.
All the acronyms.
Yeah, right. Ultimately, you know, putting together these ideas into cohesive frameworks that not only make sense from a logical perspective, but how you go about then building technical solutions for them is what the meat of this is all about, right? So refining those areas, like get familiar with OKRs, you understand what, you know, how to create an objective and key results and a measurable thing, and then apply these particular areas that you're going through when you're engaging with the business in this tactical planning, like, because this is where the meat of it is, right? We're getting to this, like, the actual paths by which we make, you know, big impacts within the organization.
Yeah, I would say 2 things that stood out for me in this section here is, it's very important to understand what you're measuring. It is hard to figure out how to measure it correctly, because what you measure, what your incentives are, will determine behavior. I can think of an example off the top of my head of this, not in the Power BI terms of world, but an organization, I think I was listening to another podcast, and the organization had incentivized their customers to get points for showing up in their store. So the thought was, if customers show up in your store, we'll give you a rewards thing. You go into the store, you check in, we'll give you a certain amount of points, and then you can redeem some of those points later on to, you know, get discounts on things or whatever you want. What they found was, by changing the incentive, by measuring that value of stepping in the store, they found users would drive to the store, walk in, check in, walk out, and go on their merry way. They would intentionally change their driving routes to make sure they were able to go through the store, check in, and leave. And that's all. They were not buying anything extra. It was just literally there to acquire points. And so they realized, while it had the right intention, we want people in store checking in, it didn't necessarily have the right outcome they were looking for. So again, the measurement side of things, you have to be strategic about what they are. The article has a number of really good measurements you should be thinking about. I'd recommend those. And I would also recommend, I mean, this is the strategic planning section pairs very well with the adoption roadmap. So you need to read through BI strategy. You need to read through strategic planning, but you also need to go through the adoption roadmap as well and make sure you read that as additionally, because I think this, they are 2 great lines of thinking that work very well.
Seth. I'm going to make one more point.
Okay, one more bonus point.
Of the things you just talked about.
Yep.
I would recommend go and listen to our episode 286 if you haven't. Creativity in Power BI, right? Ooh. It's the John Cleese one. Because this is the opportunity right now in the planning, the talking about these things with the business units, the objectives, the key result. Like, this is where we get creative, where we're thinking about things on a higher level. When we get into the implementation of this is where you take that out and you're just executing. So now is the time where we should be, like, thinking about sky's the limit, figure out where, you know, we can make the biggest impacts, and then refine these ideas down. And this is where we're at, where, because once you click into that mode, you turn off creativity and you just get it done. And then we do it again in a different cycle.
Can we talk about this later? Can we keep this conversation going another day? So fun.
Excellent. Well, with that, I want to say thank you very much. We appreciate your time listening to the podcast. We know your time is very valuable. We really ask that if you like this podcast, go grab a snippet. I mean, I didn't know if you can do this, but you can, we let you snip or clip any one of our videos. So if you find a value in the video piece or the segment in the video, clip that part out and share it with somebody else. So we'll give you a challenge there. So go ahead and get a clip going. Clip part of our video. We'd really encourage you to grab that, especially any of the things Seth says that are not really real, like how much he loves Excel and how much everyone should use Excel. And if you can find anything that Seth says about Access and how much he loves it, those would be the best parts to snip and share those as well. So we really appreciate your listenership. Please share with somebody else, like and subscribe so you can get more of our content as we produce more. Tommy, where else can you find the podcast?
You can find us in Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to subscribe and leave a rating. It helps us out a ton. Do you have a question, an idea, or a topic that you want us to talk about in a future episode? If you do, head over to powerbitips.com/podcast. Leave your name and a great question. Finally, join us live every Tuesday and Thursday, 7:30 or 7 a.m. and join the conversation on all Power BI Tips social media channels.
We promise 7 a.m. will not be our normal time. It just happens occasionally. So thankfully, you can go back and rewatch the beginning of the episode and start from the beginning too. So you can still start at 7:30. There should be some content available for you. Thank you all very much, and we'll see you next time.